For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Coming up at 5:30, it is our edition of Competition Wednesday. We just laid out what the punishments will be. Anthony will choose his punishment as he lost week one, and then we will get into, the next week, because we got to pick another slate of games, and then we got to see who wins next week, and then we'll have to spin the wheel again. It's an endless cycle of, hopefully for Anthony, it's a little different next week, and I have to do something bad, or maybe we'll even tie, but, based off recent history, it's going to be a lot of Anthony doing silly, silly human tricks all year long. So, Anthony, I promise to start being nice about this as soon as you start picking games correctly.
In due time.
In due time. It is now time for Not My Beat.
Today's top story from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not My Beat.
It is our pleasure today to welcome in, for what I believe is the first time, our guy David Harrison, Locked On Commanders, Sports Illustrated. He's been on the beat for a couple years now. Does a really great job, asks really great questions at the press conferences. He's gotten to get to know the locker room quite a bit, and it's my dumb fault that he hasn't been on the show yet. But, David, we're fixing that right now. How you doing, man?
What's up, man? How you been?
Doing pretty well. So I always, when I was on the beat, Wednesday was kind of an interesting day to be in the locker room, because you get a feel for how the guys are bouncing back from the loss. Obviously, everyone's pretty bummed right after. That's going to be the case no matter what. But by Wednesday, you kind of get the vibe of how the team is handling it and focusing on the next week. So as you guys went in that locker room today, what was the vibe, of course, Jaden Daniels and Dan Quinn at the podium, but then ultimately of the players that you got a chance to talk to?
Yeah, just a lot of determination to put the past behind them and move forward and make sure that the second time they go out there, the result is a lot more like what they expected, you know, in the first game from a competitive standpoint, but then obviously you want the result to be better. I think the way Jeremy Reeves put it was, got to get this taste out their mouth, you know what I mean? And obviously that's just going to take getting a win against the New York Giants. You know, I think that a lot of guys, it's not the division, you know, rivalry thing, even though that is obviously important. And it's not even the fact that, you know, the Giants have had this team's number, at least not losing to this team, if not, you know, straight up beating this team quite often, you know, because a lot of these guys weren't here for a lot of those games. So it's about them internally, and it's about what they're trying to accomplish. It's not about any of that outside influence. And honestly, I think that's a good role to put this thing. I think it's a good way to approach this thing, because, you know, I think previous versions of this team, we've seen they've kind of been externally motivated, right? When they come in against like a Buffalo Bills team, they try really hard, even though it doesn't always go very well. They go out there with more effort and more energy than usual, but then they come in against a team like the New York Giants, and their energy basically matches the opponent. Well, this is looking to be an internally motivated team who wants to go out there every week with maximum energy. I was actually curious, Craig. I was wondering how the bags drill would look today, you know, coming off of a loss, coming off of a disappointment. Some guys called it an embarrassment in week one, things like that. And the energy was just as high. So, for a small of a grain of salt that is, I think it kind of sets the tone and shows the mindset these guys are in right now.
No, I love that internal versus external motivation. I think that's a really astute point and something to kind of follow and track as the year goes. David Harrison, Sports Illustrated, Locked On Commanders with us here on the Hoffman Show. Even thinking back to the weekend and whatever lingering conversations you had about Sunday today, David, and whoever you've talked to over the past couple of days, what was the level of surprise internally of how specifically the defense performed against Tampa?
Yeah, I think the biggest you know, surprise from them would be their inability to finish. You know, there was a good amount of pressures, and there was a good amount of scenarios where they did the right things up until it came time to finish the play. And obviously, you know, you could argue that people win. You win a rep at the line of scrimmage, you win the rep at the snap, at the release, you know, in a defensive back's mind, all that good stuff. But ultimately, it doesn't matter when you win the route. If at the end of it, you don't make the play, it doesn't matter, right? You look at the dropped interception by Benjamin St. Juice. You know, you can call that a rep that you win, even though there's a penalty associated with it as well. You still want to see the guy come up with the interception. Then you've got other plays. You know, watch it. I watched a lot of Frankie Louvu's tape, and I was talking to him a little bit about what I saw in the locker room today, and there's a rep where he comes crashing in. The Buccaneers have a screen called for Rashad White, and Frankie Louvu comes crashing through from a defensive angle on the left side A-gap, and what he ends up doing is forcing that guard and that center to double-team him to keep him from smashing Baker Mayfield's face in. And so that center, instead of getting out ahead of that screen, what he's got to do is stay in to block Frankie Louvu. The result there is that another defender comes free to try to make a play on Rashad White as soon as the ball is getting there. The problem is the tackle ends up missed. Rashad White ends up gaining like 9 yards on that play. So what should be either a loss or maybe at best or at worst a 0 yard gain or a no gain ends up being a successful play for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, not because the function wasn't there, not because the operation wasn't sound, but because when it came time to finish it all, it faltered and fell through.
Since you watched Louvu, he's someone that I've been kind of curious to follow up on and someone that I've got a gigantic pin in for all the obvious reasons. They actually gave him multi-year money, et cetera, et cetera. I felt like when I watched him, and I didn't go back and watch like all of his pass rush snaps. You know, I guess I could now pretty easily with NFL Pro, but maybe I'll do that before we do Take Command or whatever tomorrow. Do it by the weekend. But since you went ahead and watched him, I felt like in what I did watch, David, the pass rush juice, like you see some of the explosiveness, but I'm just not like, oh, this is an elite pass rusher waiting to happen. I felt like some of his more effective rushes came from blitzes and kind of the ways he's traditionally gotten his sacks when he was in Carolina. What did you see, though, watching each and every snap from Frankie Louvu specifically as a pass rusher?
Yeah, you know, he's the kind of guy that's going to win in games. You know what I mean? Like in some games they run with him, he's actually, you know, the block eater or the decoy, whatever you want to call him. He's the guy that's going to spring somebody else loose, and sometimes he's the guy that they're trying to spring loose. And for, you know, for multiple reasons on different snaps, sometimes it worked better than other times. There's a specific rep where he's got a blitz call through the B gap, and the defensive linemen are supposed to kind of open that door for him. And they actually do a fairly good job. And to be quite honest with you, it looks to me like Graham Barton, the Buccaneers rookie center, actually sticks his left leg out there as Louvu is screaming through that gap and actually trips him. I mean, according to NFL rules, he actually goes out there and trips him. And you know, for one, the center is not supposed to be in that position anyway, so you kind of see him deliberately move into the line of fire where Louvu's coming through. And, look, if you're a Bucs teammate, you're patting that dude on the helmet and saying, hey, good job, because taking a full-grown man to the thigh at that speed and Frankie Louvu's aggression is not going to feel good. But ultimately, it keeps Louvu from getting to Baker Mayfield. So there's kind of some things like that. But honestly, I watched a lot of his reps and a lot of the action that the Buccaneers were calling, whether it's runs or rollouts or even, you know, primary looks, were actually going away from Louvu. I don't know that that was necessarily by design on the Buccaneers' part, or if that's just kind of how it worked out. But there's a solid amount of reps where the play just simply isn't going his way. And Dan Quinn kind of talked about that today when he was asked about, you know, how you hold people accountable and go through some of these lessons. And he says, you know, look, not every rep has a lesson for every single player. Some reps, there's a lesson for you. Some reps, there's not a lesson for you, just depending on where the play goes. And that's kind of how I look at it. I didn't do the math on how many, but if I had to speculate on just a number, I'd say about 35% of the Buccaneers' offensive plays honestly went in a direction where Frankie Louvu really wasn't a part of it just because of where the play developed. So that on top of some of the other things, like you said, the missed opportunities, you know, if that defender makes that play on Rashad White, we go back and look at the highlight, and I think more people see that Frankie Louvu kind of set the tone and set the table for that play to happen, but because it's a missed tackle, nobody's going to go through and wonder who opened the door for the potential tackle that nobody made, because that's just not how we operate. So I think that if this defense as a whole is able to start finishing a little bit better, you'll start to see where some of these games and some of these guys play off of each other and how effective that can be.
David Harrison, Locked On Commanders, with us here on the Hoffman Show. Also, David, when he doesn't have to rush against Tristan Wirfs, it'll probably go better.
Yeah.
And I don't know that we collectively gave Tampa's offensive line enough credit going in and set up that battle as like, hey, Tampa's got a big advantage here because their offensive line is maybe, you know, depending on how some of these young guys develop, like top five, top ten in the league. And obviously New York's they've got some talent there, but it's been real bad the last couple of years. So we'll see what they can do on Sunday. One of the other guys that came with Luvu from Carolina is Jeremy Chinn. I thought he was pretty quiet on Sunday. David, what did you make of his Commanders debut?
Yeah, he's a guy that, you know, you kind of notice how much you don't notice him, right? Because he's a guy who has such a versatile role. There's actually one rep where he's left as a single high safety, which I was a little bit surprised of, because people who covered him in Carolina would tell you last year that that's really where he got exposed and kind of ultimately what led to his falling out, where everybody kind of understood that at the end of last season he wasn't going to be back with the Panthers organization. I think it was a mutual decision at the end of the day. Both sides kind of agreed that relationship was over. But from the Panther side of things, they'll tell you, like, he just wasn't versatile enough of a safety. And that's where, you know, I think a lot of Commanders fans who wanted, like, Cam Curl to come back, you're like, okay, he's got a little bit of that box presence, but he can also cover. Jeremy Chinn is more so, you know, that hybrid linebacker. You know, some people call it a star, whatever you want to call it in your scheme is fine. But basically, he's just a linebacker who's back there and kind of provides, I would say, you know, average coverage ability. But to see him left back there as a single high safety was a little bit surprising. And you know, there was the only one rep where I really noticed it, because I was actually watching Frankie, but it just kind of stood out to me in that play specifically. So, you know, he's again, it's kind of a situation where some of these guys, like, you're going to have guys that I think you expect to be able to win one-on-one from time to time. I think Dorrance Armstrong Jr. is a guy who's going to be expected to be able to do that. But I think a lot of these guys, you know, Frankie, Jeremy Chinn, Jamin Davis even, you know, he made a couple really good plays. But even the plays where Jamin Davis flashed, it's actually the work of other guys that in tandem with what opens up that opportunity, and then those opportunities Jamin was able to close, which is again why it stands out. But I think that a lot of these players are players that they just got to play off of each other, but that's what Joe Witt Jr. wants, and those are the games that they're going to play up front, and the stunts and the twists and the delays, and, you know, one guy drops out, another guy replaces them, things like that. It's just a matter again of just getting in there to close. I didn't watch Jeremy Chinn's film from an aspect of breaking him down specifically, but absolutely noticing that we didn't notice him. Certainly, you know, you want to be able to notice a guy like that who's expected to be kind of a focal point of this defense.
Yeah, when that dude makes plays, it is a big, like, oh, you notice him. Big hits, a physical play, and just didn't seem to pop off the screen at all on Sunday. Obviously, David, offensively, that is where most people are paying attention because of Jaden. And nationally, the story this week, if you listen to any national podcast or if you read any of the columns, like, you know, Fowler and Graziano do their, you know, insider column from ESPN, and I'm like, sometimes it feels like you guys just read a stat sheet and see a number, and there's not a whole lot of context here in terms of the Jaden running story. Yes, he had 16 attempts. Obviously, they did not want him to have that many, and a lot of that is on him to actually get the ball out of his hands. But Jaden spoke, Dan spoke, you talked to other people in the locker room. What do we make of how they make sure that he does not run the ball as much moving forward? And is that even actually a stated goal with, you know, internally with Cliff Kingsbury and whatever instructions he's getting from DQ?
Yeah, I don't know. I would say that it's probably going to be a stated goal, as in, you know, like they put a cap on him, like, hey, dude, you're not allowed to run the ball. You know, combined between design runs and scrambles, you're not allowed to run the ball more than 12 times. We're going to kind of put a cap on you, because if you do that, you know, you obviously run the risk of taking a guy out of his game and away from what makes him special. And Dan Quinn talks about it all the time, superpowers, right? Well, one of Jaden Daniels' superpowers is the ability to athletically dictate the pace of the game. Another one of his superpowers, I think, is his ability and willingness to make really quick decisions, because we see a lot of rookie quarterbacks, young quarterbacks, first-year starters like we saw last year, who kind of get to this point where they're basically afraid to make a decision. And I've always said the worst decision you can make is no decision, because, you know, it used to be, make a decision and it's a wrong decision, we can work with you, right? Every coach wants you to play fast, because if you're playing fast, I can work with that. But if you're playing hesitant, you're playing scared, there's a lot wrong with that. So you want Jaden making decisions at a high rate. The trick is, let's get him tuned in. Let's get him focused, right? Let's zero him in to a shot group where the quick decision he's making is the quick decision that we want him making and the best one on the field. And, you know, that's going to take experience. He's a rookie quarterback. He impressed a lot of us with his training camp decision-making and his poise and all that stuff. And I think for some people, what that led to was, like, thinking that this rookie quarterback maybe is, like, this, you know, otherworldly rookie quarterback, where the truth of the matter is, no, like, that was his first NFL game, really, and that was his first NFL rep. And, you know, the first time he saw a fire blitz, that was his first time seeing a fire blitz in the National Football League at that speed with that type of aggression. And, you know, he's a human being just like anybody else, so the reputation of Todd Bowles' defense and how exotic it can be and aggressive it can be, that's going to be in anybody's head. So I think, was he a little bit fast to the run decision? Perhaps. But at the end of the day, you also look at the opportunities for him to run were mostly successful, mostly positive. He is getting down. I know a lot of people don't like the combat role that he's doing instead of the slide, and I get that. But, you know, the decisions he's making are good decisions. The issue, if you want to call it that, is there are better decisions to be made on some of these reps, and that's what they're going to work on fine-tuning and honing in. And as Jaden watches this tape and goes through these experiences, you know, he's just like anything else. Like when you walk up to the mic, you know, with a guest for the second time, you have that first time experience with that guest, and you know, like, hey, this dude doesn't answer questions very long. Or when you get, you know, David Harrison on, he talks too much, so I only need like five questions for the segment. Like, you know, you have a better way to attack that next experience, and that's what Jaden Daniels is going through right now.
David Harrison talking very well here on the Hoffman Show. His first appearance, yes, he will definitely be making a second sooner rather than later. No need to worry about that. I to follow up on that, though, David, last thing I'll ask you is, like, are you surprised is such a simple version of the question, but the context of, like, are you surprised he ran that much would be what we did see in training camp, which is he didn't really get out and run very much at all in camp. He did a really good job, like, way better than I expected based off the LSU tape of when he needed to get out, keeping his eyes downfield, and he made a bunch of really nice throws off schedule, and you're like, whoa, if this is what he can do, oh my God. Like, we should have been talking about him up there with Caleb Williams as that caliber, as opposed to, I think, well, some people certainly had Jaden and Caleb right next to each other. The wide majority had Caleb on a different level, and it in part because of that very skill. And so the fact that when it wasn't there on Sunday, he ran as much as he did, I think was a bit of a surprise. But that's the premise. What are your thoughts on that? That's probably not my journalism professor's favorite question that I'll ever ask in an interview, but I think it's the way to let you drop your knowledge on us within the context that I'm looking for.
Yeah, I'm absolutely surprised at the amount, right? I'm not surprised at all to see Jaden Daniels take the opportunity and say, okay, you know, with what I'm seeing right now, what I'm feeling, my instincts say take off. And that's actually a question he was asked today is, you know, when you decide to run, kind of what's going through your head? And he said, like, it's a little bit hard to describe because it's not really like a thought process of, you know, there's a safety there, a linebacker there, I'm going to go. It's more of an instinctual, you know, see grass, get grass type of environment. And I think that really kind of just speaks to who Jaden is. And a lot of it is muscle memory. A lot of it is instinctual. So that's the challenge for, you know, these coaches is through the use of tape. You know, he says he's continuing to use the VR. That can be a valuable tool. And just through the repetition of getting on an NFL field, turn that muscle memory and instinct, right, basically fight or flight, like turn your fight instinct, because that's really what he's doing when he's running is he's getting as many yards as he can for his team. Turn that instinct from run to give Terry McLaurin a chance when he's running that over, you know, down the seam, like throw that ball out there and give him that chance. And, you know, I think sometimes, too, like we kind of underestimate the pressure that's on a quarterback every time they release a football. Like, their reputation is on the line. Their legacy, so to speak, is on the line. And I don't think that Jaden is dropping back. You know, he gets a pass call. He's like, okay, it's like the future of Jaden Daniels is riding on this pass. But the truth of the matter is, especially in today's world of, you know, exploding social media and everything, like when you hear people talk about the 30 and 30 Jameis Winston season, how many people recount how many times an interception was caught off of the fingertips of a wide receiver? How many times do people talk about the interception that was caught because the defensive lineman got their hand up and batted the ball into the air because the offensive lineman didn't push and punch enough to keep that D lineman's hands down? Nobody talks about that. All you talk about is the 30 and 30, and everybody laughs about it. So, you know, there's a little bit of understandable, again, when you're looking at a rookie quarterback, like, yeah, you want to give your guy a chance. I think that's where, for me, I was a little bit surprised, because looking at training camp and the joint practices, I thought Jaden would more confidently be willing to put the ball up and let his guys make plays for him. And he didn't do that as much as I expected him to, and that's where some of those runs came from. I don't think it's from, like, a I don't trust Terry, I don't trust Zach Ertz situation. I think it's just a rookie quarterback, the first time this thing is on the line, because, you know, even though Dan Quinn's not putting the cape on him and not putting the captain's patch on him, but he's the quarterback. So at the end of the day, quarterback of your team, whether you call that, whether he breaks down the huddle or not, he is the leader of that team, and there's a lot of pressure that rides from him. I think that's what we saw in week one, and again, hopefully week two it's better, week three a little bit better, week four, so on and so forth, you know, and I know everybody likes to do the Texans comparison, so maybe, you know, eventually you get that C.J. Stroud moment, but the good thing about Jaden is, as long as he keeps playing the way that he plays and true to his game, and his coaching staff keeps coaching him true to his game instead of trying to change him, clicks, I feel like it's going to click really big, and I feel like it's going to click really loud.
David Harrison, Locked On Commanders, and you can read his work in Sports Illustrated on their website at SI.com and other Commanders coverage there. David, this was great, dude. Let's definitely do it again, and we'll be having you back plenty this season.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you. Have a good one.
All right, that's David Harrison, everybody, with us on The Hoffman Show. When we get back, it is Competition Wednesday. Three games. Anthony and I go head-to-head against the spread. And then, based off how we do, we have to spin a wheel of minor punishment. Anthony's going to spin the wheel, and we pick our next three games next on the Team 980.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app, and it is Competition Wednesday. So here is what that means for us. Of course, the Commanders have Competition Wednesday where they do drills that add a little bit of competitive flair to their practices. For us, we just pick a couple extra games, and we do it against the spread, so a little bit more challenging. And we don't necessarily go head-to-head in terms of picking the same games, but Anthony and I each get to pick three games. So we're in total control of what we do. And then assuming that one of us finishes with a better record than the other, the loser has to spin a wheel of punishment and perform that punishment either on the show, depending on what it is. Like, if Anthony hits this wheel and gets the 10 handstand push-ups, then I think he's just going to have to go do 10 handstand push-ups against the wall while I laugh at him. If it's 100 push-ups and he's got until 6 o'clock to do it, so he's going to have to get a move on. Although we might let him do it tomorrow because he is wearing a very nice shirt. And the push-ups do feel like it would be a little hard to. So maybe Anthony, you'll be off the hook for today, and we can do the push-ups tomorrow. But we also have added a couple of other punishments on there. One of them is our classic show punishment, which is loser buys winner lunch. And that's going to have to wait till next week because I'm in Indianapolis right now, which is why if you're watching us on YouTube, you're like, why is Craig in a headset in what looks like a hotel room? Because I'm wearing a headset in a hotel room. All right, so last week, I think I have these actually over here. Yeah, I do. Anthony, I have my picks from last week. I don't have yours. I had Green Bay +2.5 against Philly. I lost that one. But I had Chicago -4 against Tennessee. Chicago won by a touchdown. Cover. New England +8.5 against Cincinnati. They won outright. So I'm 2-1. Anthony Haney, how'd your picks come out?
Oh, you're 2-1?
Yeah. Yeah, I was.
I don't think any of my hit.
You went 0-3?
Baltimore +3. And I would have hit that, you know, had Likely's toe not been out.
Well, it depends on what happens in overtime. If the Chiefs walk off.
Oh, no, the Ravens were going for two.
That's true.
John Harbaugh said this.
You would have had it either way.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true.
Green Bay plus 2.5. We both got that one wrong. And then for some silly reason, I thought the Colorado Buffaloes were going to win the game against Nebraska. But I'm not going to lie, Craig. I think Nebraska is better than a lot of people think.
I think Deion's a mess, bro.
Well, two things can be true, I guess.
Yeah.
So I went 0 for 3. I have the will over here. I don't think. Oh, there it is. You can see. But the thing is. Oh, I need to get closer. Yeah, I don't.
Microphones work when you talk in them.
Yeah, I don't think we can do the will today. Two of the spaces are still open because I was, you know, cutting and like pasting.
You didn't finish your arts and crafts project in time.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, so we might have to use the alternative method. Or
the alternative method required minimal extra setup, Anthony, and you didn't tell me that in the break. So now as I roll around trying to find my backpack, which has an extra microphone. Oh, the extra microphone. Actually, I could do this. Hold on. Keep talking. Keep describing. For the radio audience that can't see what is the saddest prize wheel that has ever been put together.
First of all, oh my gosh, for you to disrespect my will.
I didn't disrespect your effort. I am disrespecting your skill.
Yeah, I think I might have to go back to the drawing board when it comes to this. Just because the paper I put in there is a little flimsy and the little spinner is like getting caught on the paper. So yeah, I think I'm gonna have to modify how I really want to do the will. So next Wednesday, I guess we'll officially debut the will of punishments. And it'll be exciting. It shall be exciting.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how many different punishments do we have?
So we have six.
We have six.
Yes. We have six. We have six, and they are posted on the will twice.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have a pen. Okay. What, the two that we've added. So we have lunch. We have the 100 push-ups. We have a fantasy sub. We have the ice bath. We have 10 handstand push-ups.
We have the extra hot wings.
Did we skip the handstand push-ups?
Yeah, I think so.
We decided that we just wanted one physical fitness test.
Yeah.
So we have hot wings.
And then we have a costume show.
And we have a costume. Okay. Now, because I am in a hotel room in Indianapolis, I do have company, as in my wife is here with me.
Yes.
So, Rachel, may I borrow you for a second? You don't have to be on camera. I just need your voice in this microphone. It's very, you can say no. But it's literally all I need you to do is a double-digit number. So 10 to 70. I just need one number.
13.
13. Okay. Anthony, you luck out. You're going to buy me lunch. That's all I need. Thank you.
Okay. That's easy.
Yeah. What I did was I had them labeled 1 through 6.
Uh-huh.
And whatever the first digit that she said was, if she had said 20-something, you would have had to do the push-ups. 30-something, fantasy sub. So I didn't want to like make it 1 through 6, and then she could have looked at my list. She didn't know the methodology.
Mm.
So lucky number 13 for you, you just have to buy lunch.
Okay, that's smooth. I can do that.
All right, so do you want to plan that? Well, Monday we have I don't know if you saw, the Wizards are doing their media thing on Monday.
Yeah.
Including are you going to play in the pickup game? I'm not going to because I am going to, my legs are going to be toast from a weekend long run.
Yes, I want to play. I want to go out there. Yeah.
Have you told the people?
No, I have not.
Okay, you need to tell Ketsia and them.
Yeah.
But anyway, the point is, we could either do Monday after the show, or we could aim for Tuesday, or perhaps next Wednesday. You could have to pay it off. That would also work.
Yeah, let's do next.
So, let's do next Wednesday.
Yeah.
Competition Wednesday. We should have a meeting with the boss, I think. Or do we have that this week? No, we don't, because today's Wednesday.
Yeah.
Duh. So before the meeting next week, you owe me lunch. Okay. So that was easy, kind of. We'll also have our wheel. We'll make sure that the arts and crafts project is done. I'm glad that I had my sheet of paper and the extra microphone within an arm's reach. Very scientific method there. Now there's one thing left to do, Anthony.
Pick
and
games.
That is pick three more games. Who you got? Or would you like me to go first?
We can alternate.
We can alternate. Okay, that's fair.
All right. So I'm back supporting the flock, the Ravens. They play the Raiders this weekend, and the spread is 9.5, -9.5. I'm rolling with the Ravens again. I think they get it done. I think they beat the Raiders by more than 10 points. If the Chargers were able to do it, I'm thinking the Ravens are more than capable of getting the job done. I'm going with the Baltimore Ravens, -9.5, baby.
So, I think we have our first head-to-head here. Because I'm going Vegas plus the 9. You got it at 9.5. I would rather that number, obviously.
Yep. What is the number you're looking at?
I got -9 from ESPN. But are you going on MGM?
I'm on CBS.
CBS? Okay. It's better for me. I'll take Vegas plus 9.5.
Where are the ESPN spreads?
In their when they list all the games.
Oh, because I was looking at Syracuse's point spread. I couldn't find theirs.
But
that's why.
I'm going to take the better number. All right, so I've got Vegas plus 9.5. That was going to be my first pick.
Okay.
My second pick, I think I'm going to ride the Bears again. The Bears are on the road on Sunday Night Football against the Texans. And I just think defensively they're good enough to make this a game. I don't think I'm going to wind up picking them outright. And does Caleb Williams against a very good Houston defense scare me a little bit? Yes, but like Anthony Richardson played them very well last week, and he's basically a rookie, and I would say is not as advanced as a passer as Caleb. And while Chicago's defense did get the benefit of playing Will Levis, and now they have to deal with C.J. Stroud, I'm getting 6 points. I'm going to take it. I'm going to go Chicago plus 6 against Houston.
Okay. Chicago plus 6 against Houston. I like the way you think, Greg, but guess what? I have a sleeper of a pick. Well, not a sleeper, I guess.
A sleeper.
I'm going to be riding with my Indianapolis Colts. They suit up against Malik Willis and the Packers. And the point spread on that game, 3.5. Give me the Colts -3.5.
I definitely don't hate that pick, and there is some temptation to follow you down that road. But in the interest of being interesting, I will leave that game alone.
Okay.
And instead, am I going to bet on the Patriots again? Am I a sick person? What is wrong with me? Here would be my reasoning why. Also, first of all, what line do you have for the Seahawks-Patriots game? Because you seem to be off a half a point. You have 3?
3.5.
Seattle. Okay, I've got 3.5 as well. The Seahawks are good, but it's a 1 o'clock game at New England. And it just feels like the kind of game, screw it, let's do it. I'm taking all dogs this week. This is the kind of uncomfy that doesn't feel good.
Mm-hmm.
And if I've learned anything from Sheehan over the years when it comes to this stuff, that's how you're supposed to feel. I will say the stinkiest fish of the week, the one that makes absolutely no sense, is the Cardinals are favored by 1 against the Rams at home.
Yeah.
It feels like just take the Rams, but that line stinks to high heaven, so I'm staying away from it. But I'm going to go Vegas plus 9.5, Chicago plus 6, New England plus 3.5 at home. Those are my three Competition Wednesday official submissions.
Say no more, Craig. My last one, I'm taking this team right here. The Pittsburgh. Huh?
Didn't you already say 3?
No, I said 2.
You went first. How did I get?
I think you. So after I went coach, you went again.
It was supposed to be me again. Yeah. But I'm taking the Pittsburgh Steelers over the Broncos -3. I'm taking all the favorites this week. You're taking all the dogs. I'm taking all the favorites. I think Bo Nix is about to be running for his life. After I saw what TJ Watt did last weekend, man. I like that number, -3.
I hear you. I don't think it's a terrible idea. I definitely don't. There's a couple picks that I like of yours, Anthony. So maybe this is a week. Maybe, who knows? Maybe by next Wednesday, I'm spinning a wheel to eat, and I wind up having to eat some hot wings or something.
I'm not going to lie. The 9.5 is starting to scare me, Craig.
Too late now. That's Competition Wednesday here on the Hoffman Show. Coming up at 6 o'clock, it is our pick 6 at 6. Ton of news out of Ashburn today. We get you caught up in just 15 minutes. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Coming up at 6 o'clock, we got our pick 6 at 6. Ton of good stuff. Dan Quinn today talking about the third down defense. Updates on Emmanuel Forbes. Was he hurt? Did he get benched? What's going on? So we got more from DQ coming up at 6 o'clock. Jaden Daniels also spoke today. Had plenty of interesting things to say about how much he ran and all the other things that you'd expect him to say or to talk about. But tonight, Anthony, I mentioned this in What's Trending. Mystic Sky in Chicago, 8 o'clock, and it is ridiculous how lucky the WNBA got from a schedule standpoint down the stretch of this season that there is just one playoff spot remaining. But the teams that are battling for it, there are three remaining. They all play each other. Like, there's five games left, and I think each team has three games against the other teams in the mix. So right now, the Mystics are in 10th, right? 8th is your last spot. 10th is where the Mystics are. They are 2 games back of Chicago. Obviously, if they beat Chicago head-to-head tonight, that shrinks down to 1 game, and they would leapfrog Atlanta, who lost to Minnesota last night. The Mystics then have a game Friday at Atlanta, Sunday home against Atlanta, and they really need to win all three because they then face on Tuesday the Liberty, yikes, best team in the league, and then at Capital One Arena next Thursday they face Indiana, who's the hottest team in the league as Caitlin Clark and company have caught absolute fire since the Olympic break. Meanwhile, Atlanta, who again is a half game ahead of the Mystics right now, has just 4 games remaining, and it's Mystics at home at in D.C. on the 15th over the weekend, and then they host Chicago next Tuesday and then close at New York. Meanwhile, the Sky, as you can imagine, you already have a lot of their schedule based off the games that I already mentioned. They have D.C. tonight, then they're at Minnesota, home against Phoenix, at Atlanta, at Connecticut. So three really, I'm going to use the word intense schedules, Anthony, because you got three teams fighting for one spot. They all play each other, and then they're like any other game that they're not playing each other, they're playing playoff teams. This is going to be a fun week and a half to close the WNBA season.
Definitely going to be fun. I feel as though we probably would have the last spot secured up if we, you know, weren't injured as much as we had been all season long. You talk about, you know, what Brittany Sykes brings to this this Washington team. And we sit on a night in, night out daily. Like, she's a stat sheet stuffer, and her impact on the game is just, you know, phenomenal. So, again, like you said, the NBA, they got lucky in terms of, you know, how the NBA season, like, panned out for all three of these teams. But, and I want the Mystics to go out there and win, you know, put forth their best foot. But, you know, I still have my eyes on a bigger prize than, you know, the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, whoever's going to be the 8th seed is going to make the playoffs and then probably get their doors blown off by New York, because New York is really, really, really good. That actually gets to, you talk about the bigger prize, though, Anthony. The I don't even call it funny, ironic, whatever word you want to use. Part of all of this, the other piece of this is the Mystics are guaranteed to get a lottery pick because they have Atlanta's pick. It's Atlanta traded it to Dallas, Dallas traded it to Washington, and so depending on what happens here, if Chicago it takes that final seed, then the Mystics will have two lottery picks. If the Mystics obviously missed the playoffs, and Atlanta makes it, they'll have just the one. They'll have their own. If they wind up leapfrogging both of these teams, then they would get Atlanta's pick in the lottery. Now, the lottery is fairly heavily weighted in the LA Sparks' favor. They have already locked up the number one lottery odds, and they have a 44% chance at the number one pick, which is projected to be Paige Bueckers, which LA would definitely take Bueckers because they need a point guard to go with Rekia Jackson and Cameron Brink. Damn, that squad would be loaded. And talk about star power in LA with those three. Oh my God. But there's three, four good players in this draft for sure, like potential franchise changers. So making sure you get one of those top four picks is huge. And realistically, if you have two of them, could you trade and get back up higher if you really, really like Kiki Arifin, who's going to be at USC this year with Juju Watkins? She's been at Stanford the last couple of years. Or there's a 6'6" like French post player that is really good, that's like 18 years old and is a stud. So she's going to be in this draft. So there's definitely a lot of talent. Bueckers is certainly the prize. I'm not going to say to the level that Clark was last year, but pretty darn close in terms of both a player and the star power that comes with it. The summer of Paige is finally over. She's finally back in class. Although who knows, she could hop on a plane and be anywhere, it seems like. But it's going to be really fun, and it all starts tonight in terms of the playoff push. 8 o'clock on Monumental Sports Network, which means it is simulcast here on the Team 980 with Megan McPeak and Christy Winters-Scott. We have one more hour of business to take care of ourselves, though. And by the way, if that's not enough hoops for you, I'm in Indy right now because I'm going to Fever Aces tonight, and they play again on Friday. So you got great, great action all around the W the rest of the weekend. But, of course, here, if you will, where most of you are listening in DC, all eyes are on Ashburn, and we'll get you caught up on the news of the day with our pick six at six next.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoop.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.